ஞானசந்திரன் ஞானாஞ்சன சிவாக்கிய சச்சிவன் தங்கேன கஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குருவே நமஹ. It is said in the scriptures that by Krishna we get Guru and by Guru we get Krishna. So this is like a cyclic formula. By Krishna you get Guru. How? When Krishna finds that a soul is very sincerely seeking the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, then Krishna will arrange your life in such a way that you will come across a great devotee of the Lord. It is said in this world there are millions and millions of human beings, but out of which only one out of thousands of them may endeavor for perfection. And even those who have achieved perfection, only one out of thousand may understand Krishna in truth. So the ratio is very, very rare. And even those who are pursuing the path of spiritual life, the Krishna bhaktas or devotees of Krishna, are extremely rare. One out of crore, it is said, Koti Shati Mahamune. So suddenly, we by our own endeavor cannot get in touch with the Guru. It's not possible. Like when I was in my school days, I used to chant a particular song of Lord Shiva. So I came to know that this song actually is seeking some material benefits from Shiva. Then I stopped singing it. And I used to just offer a prayer to Shiva that whatever is best in my life, please offer it to me. Whatever is best for my growth in spiritual life, offer it to me. So later on I was in South India and I was brought to Bombay by the will of Providence, and I studied, and then I came across a Guru and we got a shelter. So some Guru is in America, somebody is in Tamil Nadu, and they both are brought like this so that one can get a shelter. So how is it made possible? Because Lord is present in the heart of every living being and He will answer your call. If, like there is a saying, you know, you batter the door will be open. So one has to actually call upon God. One has to request Him to shower His mercy. So when one prays to God, then the prayer will be answered, certainly. So in this way, Krishna, as the Paramatma, is very attentively sitting in our heart, watching our thoughts. So when we express our desire, that, oh, this material world is such a horrible place, I want shelter of someone who can teach me about God. So one has to have some eagerness. Then Krishna will bring you in the company of devotees, where you will find that the language they speak is so understandable to you. That's what I found. When I came in the company of devotees, I found as if they are my own village men. I felt as if I have been in touch with them for millions of years. That's what you feel when you come in the company of devotees. Because whatever they say, it is immediately acceptable. It is making so much sense. Not only are they are just speaking it, but they are living such a life. So it is like somebody who is walking on a hot sandy beach and the scorching heat of the sand. If they get the shelter of a cooling shade of a tree, how will they feel? So one gets such an experience. And one can get such an experience in the company of even those who speak a different language. Language is no barrier. In fact, I can boldly say my relationship with devotees speaking different language like Marathi or Hindi or Gujarati is far more nearer and closer compared to my relationship with those who speak my own mother tongue. Because I come from a different state, I come from Tamil Nadu. So my relationship with the boys who speak Marathi is far more closer to me. So what kind of affinity can we have between somebody speaking two different languages? So this is a proof that the spiritual relationships have no barriers. It can be between an old person and a young person. It can be between somebody speaking Marathi and somebody speaking Kerala, Malayalam, or Tamil. It can be between a very educated person and an illiterate. It can be between a white American and a black African. The relationships are not superficial. It is springing from the heart. So language, nationality, caste, creed, color have no say in spiritual relationship. It is completely pure and pristine. That is why the relationship between Guru and disciple also goes beyond all the superficial barriers of language, nationality, caste, creed, color, everything. We find sometimes Hindi speaking devotees, they have a great attraction for somebody who doesn't even belong to their nationality, somebody belonging to some other country. So that's actually, that love and attraction that comes actually is on the platform of soul. So one shouldn't be surprised how the American guru can influence an Indian disciple. He may be speaking Hindi or Marathi. It was true even in the case of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was actually speaking Bengali in general. And then when he went to America, he started speaking in English. And his English was highly accented in Bengali language. So when he would be giving classes, the American boys and girls would come, but hardly could they understand what he was trying to say. All they liked was the prasadam that he made in the beginning. And after that they started appreciating the kirtan, Hare Krishna kirtan. Everyone would bring their own instrument, whatever they had, and they would join this Nam Sankirtan of Mahamantra. But all those boys and girls have something common to say. They all say that this man, when we met him for the first time, we could know 100% within our heart that he has not come to cheat us. He is a very genuine guru. He has come to give us something very honestly for our benefit. So we could clearly see that he is a well-wisher who will always wish good for us. Just like a mother is a well-wisher of a child. Similarly, they found Prabhupada to be one of the greatest well-wishers in their lives. A complete faith. Because all of us have our conscience, we have our heart, and when we relate, we can easily understand. So just imagine the language. Prabhupada was speaking in a foreign language. And they could not even understand his language. So Prabhupada gave a beautiful example. Just like if there is fire in your house and you want to put out the fire and there is no one to help you, then you ask your neighbor. And the neighbor is speaking some other language. He is speaking Spanish or German and he doesn't know your language. What will you do? Somehow or other you have to convey to him with your hands, gestures and your face showing the fear. You have to show to him that there is fire in your house and you need help. And you have to call him, please come, come and help me. Something like what we do in Damsharats. Do some action and try to convey. So Prabhupada said, such a thing has to be done for propagating the message of the Vedas. He said, I am writing the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, but there could be many spelling mistakes or grammatical mistakes in my writing because it is not perfect. I have written it hurriedly and I published the books also. But I am sure about one thing. The book is conveying the most sublime message, glorifying the Supreme Lord Krishna. So he says, I believe that the people of America will accept this, understand the point, that the message should be appreciated. Even amongst all of you, some of you may be coming from villages where you might not have had a training or studying in a convent or a matriculation school. So when you give a lecture, you may have difficulty in pronouncing the English words. It may come out in a distorted fashion. Will it be possible for you to make a proper sentence, framing it properly. Still, if you really have Krishna consciousness in your heart, that will be appreciated by everyone. Have you observed it? Even if a devotee has broken language, still what is appreciated by the people is the Krishna consciousness that he has in his heart, not the language. What is the use of a person who speaks a very sweet English language but is hardly conveying anything meaningful? Anything that makes sense. That way, you see, there are people who are used for dubbing for the movies. They speak such English, but it hardly carries any wisdom. In the same way, what matters between guru and disciple is not the charismatic appearance of the guru. It is not the language of the guru or the nationality of the guru or how many followers he is having. All these things, they don't matter at all. These are all superficial. If somebody is putting a faith in Guru based on these things, that means he is a sentimentalist. So the real faith in Guru actually develops based on the inspiration a disciple gets from the Guru. That inspiration should come purely on a spiritual platform. So the Guru inspires the disciple by various means, by his own practice. He is not just speaking with his mouth, but by his own practice. He is called an acharya. Acharya means one who practices what he preaches. And the disciple, by his regular association, can get inspiration from such a guru, from every one of his activities. So, the Samsara Dhavanala prayer, which we sing in the morning, That tells you what are the activities of a guru. If you want to know what is a guru supposed to do, those are the activities of a guru. Or you can read Shad Goswami Ashtakam, what the Goswamis used to do. So in this way, your guru is one who is always Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. And such a guru who has dedicated his life for the purpose of practicing and preaching Krishna consciousness, and whose only business is Krishna consciousness, why will Krishna not exhibit himself to such a personality? We should not be surprised. Of course, Krishna is achintya, inconceivable. But he becomes conceivable to those who have given up everything for his pleasure. When Krishna becomes approachable by such a person, it is a Vedesha Durlabham, Adurlabham Atma Bhakta, Govindamadi Purushan Tamaham Bhajami. It is said, the Vedas have so many verses, thousands and thousands of verses glorifying the Supreme Lord. Even when the personified Vedas are glorifying the Lord, they were saying, oh my Lord, you are the super soul of the universe, you are the controller of the three modes of material nature, everything emanates from you, and everyone is subordinate to you in this world, there is no one equal to you, you are the creator, you are the destroyer, you are the maintainer, and you are whole and soul of this universe. So the Vedas are glorifying, but Krishna went to sleep, so he was not very impressed by this place. But on the other hand, when the gopis, or even his covered boyfriends, when they would fight with Krishna, they would scold Krishna, that sound was more pleasing to his ears. Sometimes the elderly gopis like Yashoda and all, they would clap hands and tell Devi Krishna to dance, and he would dance in front of him. And sometimes they would speak in the Braja language. You heard Braja? Vrindavan language. In broken language, they would be speaking to one another, village language. But those words, the gossip of the elderly gopis was very pleasing to Krishna's ears. It is said. So, this is the fact that the Lord becomes greatly impressed by his pure devotees, who are unalloyed devotees. So, we said many examples even before. This is not difficult to understand. How Lord was greatly pleased by the, chip rice offered by Sudama. It's not that Lord is hankering for some broken piece of chipped rice. In fact, chipped rice is one of the low quality foods. He didn't ask for opulent foods, but the chipped rice was pleasing to him. In the same way, Vidura's wife offered him a banana, but out of intense love, her eyes was brimming with tears. And Vidura and his wife, they offered the cover of a banana instead of offering banana, but Lord accepted it gratefully, very happily. Shabari offered some bitten fruits to Lord Ramachandra. So these things were very pleasing to the Lord. Then the offering given by Duryodhana. That's why they're saying that Duryodhana offered chapan bhog. What is that song? Anybody knows? Duryodhana ke bhog na khayo. What is the second line? You know this song? Krishna Jinta naam. So he went to the house of Vidura and he ate, but when Duryodhana was ready to give a big bhoga for Krishna, he said, forget it, I won't come. I am not happy with you, because you are not my devotee. So in this way, devotees out of their love, even if they anuvati upasritam bhakte, premna bhuryavane bhavet. Lord says, even if they offer something insignificant, that is so pleasing to me, that I am completely satisfied. On the other side, bhuryapi abhakto upasritam. Nane toshaya kalpate, he says. Even if my non-devotee offers me mountains and mountains of bhoga, that is not pleasing to me. Because there is no devotion in that. So, what matters is our devotional element. Those who are, whose eyes are tinged with the salve of love, they can see Krishna. It's possible. So one needs the eye. It is said Surdas didn't have the eyes. But he could see Krishna. How? Because it is not with his blunt eyes made up of blood and some flesh that we can see God. One needs the eye that is tinged with salve of love. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena. So the more your bhakti increases, the more you will also feel a lack of attraction for indriya tṛpti, sense gratification. The more you will want to serve the Supreme Lord. And in this way one can gradually advance in this understanding deeper and deeper. And one can get to see the inconceivable Lord face to face. It is possible for one to see Krishna face to face. It is not just a theory written in paper. Because we have practical evidences in the Shastra to show how Lord Gopinath, Chirchor Gopinath, he stole a pot of sweet rice for his late devotee Madhavendrapuri. We have the pastime of Sakshi Gopal, how he went to give Sakshi to his devotee. There are many historical pastimes which have happened, which show that the deity of the Lord is non-different from him. Lord can appear through his deity. For the pleasure of Prahlad, Lord appeared from a pillar. The ordinary pillar is dead. But when Hiranyakashipu broke the pillar with his fist, Lord appeared from that. So Lord can appear even from in between a pillar, which is considered otherwise dead. So Lord Narasimhadeva appeared like that. So one shouldn't be surprised, how is a guru or a great devotee of the Lord able to see Krishna or relate with him? The very fact that he has absolutely no attraction for the things of the world and his constant engagement in devotional service 24 hours a day is a proof that he is seeing Krishna always. Srila Prabhupada said, there was no time in my life when I was not seeing Krishna at any point of time. So such devotees are always with Krishna or with God wherever they go. And so God promises that in the scriptures, that I reside in the heart of a devotee constantly. In fact, I rest in the heart of a devotee peacefully. Because you cannot rest in any place where there are snakes and scorpions. If somebody gives you a large room, very beautiful room with fridge and telephone and television and everything, but they tell you, you can lie on the ground, there is a mattress, but only there are about two snakes in the room. Will you be able to sleep peacefully? You will not get any sleep there. Because once you know snakes, you will jump on the table or the chair. You cannot lie on the ground. In the same way, the heart of a conditioned soul is filled with so many snakes and scorpions like lust, pride, envy, anger, illusion and greed. How can you expect Lord to come and reside or give his darshan? There are many people. Lord will automatically come and reside. So Lord says that in the heart of a pure devotee I am residing. Sadavo hridayam mahyam sadhunam hridayam praham madanyate na jananti anam te bhyomanavati. He is saying, I am residing in the heart of my devotee. And the devotee is residing in my heart. I cannot think of anyone but my devotee. And my devotees cannot think of anyone but me. This is the kind of intimate relationship between Lord and his devotees. So such a great spiritual master who has given his body, mind and words, that's why they carry a danda. Danda carried by sannyasis has got three sticks. They are using their body, their mind and words. Kaya, vacha, manasa. All the three in the Lord's service. 24 hours a day. No other business. Simply being Krishna conscious and distributing Krishna consciousness to others. One lives like that, Lord will certainly give darshan to such a devotee. In fact, Lord cannot give up the company of such a devotee. That is the reason why it is said, sadhu sangha sadhu sangha sarva shastra poi, lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi poi. If you associate with such devotees who are thinking of Krishna always, then it is contagious, then we will also get bhakti by following in that footsteps. That is why somebody was asking, what is the need of a guru? Why should we take the association of a guru in order to make advancement? There are books available. It is not possible, because it is said, one can achieve Krishna's mercy one and only after which he has achieved the mercy of his pure devotee. In fact, Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of a pure devotee. First the pure devotee's mercy comes and then Krishna's mercy comes upon the devotee. So one cannot directly get the mercy of Krishna. Some people say that just like you have a railway line where the train is moving. So in the same way, it is said, some people consider only guru is important. We don't need God. Like there is a mission in India to propagate that the Guru is God. We just accept him as God. He is the ultimate. So such people are accepting only one railway line. How can the train move? It cannot move. Similarly, there are, so these people are called as Mayavadis. Because Mayavadi is impersonless, they consider the Guru to be God many times. On the other hand, there are Sahajiyas who say that I have a relationship with Krishna directly. So Sahajiyas, they say we have a relation with Krishna directly. We will meet Krishna like Mirabai. Mirabai actually did not have any guru. She is certainly an exception. But exception cannot become a rule. Can we make exception a rule? No. Exception is an exception. Sometimes occasionally, there may be one or two such devotees who did not accept the spiritual master, but who were already pure devotees right from their birth. So Mirabai was like that. Right from her childhood, she was constantly thinking of Krishna. But everyone cannot say, I will also be like that. Let me have a relation with Krishna directly. That's why accepting only one railway line. So if you accept only Guru as God, then you become Mayavadi. If you accept only Krishna saying that I will have a direct relation with him, then you become Sahaja. The meaning of the word Sahaja means taking cheaply. Taking cheaply. Actually, such Sahajas who used to live in Vrindavan, over a period of time they all fell down, prayed illicit sex, gambling and such things. They could not maintain the spiritual standards. Because when there is a Guru, he is always on the constant guard, watching you and giving you direction and guidance. When you don't accept the Guru and you say that I have a direct connection with Krishna, then you fall down. So we need both Guru and Krishna. Both are required. Guru should be given respect as good as Krishna, but he is not Krishna. Just like the ambassador of India, when he visits the United States, he also gets a salute by the corps there. But then he is actually not the Prime Minister of India. He is representative of the Prime Minister of India. In the same way, Guru should be given a salute or respect as good as Krishna. Sakshat Haritvena Tamastha Shastra, it is said. Like that, he should be given respect. Why? Because he is giving us the most valuable jewel in our lives. Krishna consciousness. There cannot be anything better that somebody can offer you. What can be better in your life that somebody can offer you? Somebody can offer you nice eatables to eat. Somebody can offer you a gift of television or gift of a home. Your parents may buy you a home for you. Somebody may offer that girl in marriage to you. These are all gifts, but these gifts are incomparable to the gift that a Guru is giving you. Because he is giving you not only liberation from the suffering of birth, old age, disease and death, but he is actually reinstating you in your eternal constitutional position in the spiritual sky, in eternal Swarupa. From there you will never return to this world. It is an eternal position. Forever you are going to serve Krishna in his company. So Guru's position is very, very special. So one should respect Guru like that. At the same time, when one is respecting Guru, one should not become sentimental. That was practically shown by Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj certainly respected his Guru at all times. But at one time, when he was about to give the ablutions of water in charity to a small Brahmana who was Vamanadev, he was about to give, but his Guru was very intelligent, Shukracharya. He told Bali, Bali Maharaj, why? Do not give this person. Don't think he is an ordinary child. He is Sakshat Vishnu. Vishnu has come to cheat you. He will take away all your land. I don't know how, but he will cheat you. I know that he will cheat you. So he could understand that. Because it is said when this small boy Vamanadeva was entering the sacrificial arena, his Brahma Tejas from his body was so effulgent that it diminished the presence of all the Brahmanas sitting there. Then they all stood up immediately with arms folded, with great respect. So everyone could understand that this is not an ordinary Brahmana. This must be a very special person. And Shukracharya could study that clearly. So he told them. And then Bali considered in his mind that my Guru is telling me something contrary to the principles of religion. Shastras say that the ultimate goal of life is to please Lord Vishnu or Krishna. That is the goal of life. But here is my Guru who is telling, don't please Krishna. He is just telling diametrically opposite. It cannot be true. It is not proper. So he understood that his Guru is materially motivated. Actually, Shukracharya was thinking that if Bali is defeated, then he also will not get his salary. And he will also be finished. He will not be able to survive. So he was depending on Bali. So a Guru should never depend on the wealth of his disciple. That goes to show that. If a Guru is accepting someone as a disciple because he is a very wealthy millionaire, then that Guru is a cheater, he is a hypocrite. Guru should not see difference between a poor man and a rich man. So a Guru should give diksha to anyone who deserves to be the ideal disciple. So when Shukracharya said like this, Bali Maharaj could understand that now he has fallen from the standards of religious principles. I am not going to hear him any longer. Then he went ahead to offer the oblations. But now the Guru was so powerful, he assumed the form of a bee and went into the kamandalu inside and is blocking the path of water and he was shouting from inside, Bali, don't give, don't give. So Then Vamanadeva was very intelligent. He just smiled and he took two pieces of kusha grass and he inserted into the kettle mouth. And then he inserted, the bee became blinded and immediately bleeding, with the bleeding eye, the bee came out. And then the water came out and he offered. Now somebody may say, just see, because he did not follow the Guru's instruction, he lost all his wealth. This is what the Karmakandi say. The Karmakandi people say that Bali lost all his wealth. So because he didn't follow the Guru, so whatever our Guru tells, you have to follow. If Guru tells how to achieve Dhanandehi, Putrandehi, Janandehi, Putrandehi, Putridehi, all these things, whatever Guru teaches, you have to do that. And you have to achieve all these things from the Devatas. And you have to obey the Guru. So this is the version of the Karmakandis. And what do the devotees say? Of course, Lord came as Vamanadev and he took a huge form of Trivikrama. And he expanded himself up to the sky. His head was touching the clouds. And then Lord expanded his one leg and took the top portion of all the upper worlds and lower worlds, and there was no place to keep the third foot. Where did he keep third foot? And Bali surrendered his ego completely and bowed down and told the Lord, now you please keep it on my head. So Lord of course kept it on his head and gave his causeless mercy upon him. And then Bali Maharaj was sent to a place called Sutala Loka and Lord became his doorkeeper there. Do you know that? That is the next part of the pastime. Lord became his doorkeeper there. He was standing as doorkeeper. And Bali Maharaj got to see this beautiful form of Vamanadev every day. That was the only thing it is there. Every day, morning and evening, he could see his form and have a loving reciprocation with him, like that. So which is greater? To be in the company of the Lord always is greater? Or to possess all the wealth of the world by not giving in charity to Lord is greater? What is the use of possessing the whole material world if you don't have a peace of heart, peace of mind? Hiranyakashipu had all the three worlds under his control. In fact, all the demigods were like toys in his hand. He could control every one of them. But he did not have peace of mind. He lost peace of mind. On the other hand, Bali Maharaj offered everything that he had to Vamanadev. And then he not only just achieved peace of mind, but he achieved eternal love for his Lord. So in this way, if Guru falls from the standard of giving the right kind of instructions, then one can discard the Guru. We have the right to do that. So how do we know a Guru is in good standing or a Guru has fallen down? That is not at all difficult. Krishna consciousness is so obvious that if one is not following the standards, one will find that that a person may succumb to falling down to illicit sex or gambling or simply money making or not following the sadhana of chanting 16 rounds of Hare Krishna every day. Srila Prabhupada has given books for the coming 10,000 years. These are actually called as the law books for the coming 10,000 years. Srila Prabhupada said that. And in these books, Prabhupada has given clear-cut instruction of what is the meaning of being a devotee who is in good standing. There is absolutely not a tinge of doubt in that. Very clear. If you have to chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra, and you have to follow the four related principles, and one has certain mangalarti, one has to do this, that, everything is given. So, if a guru is not in good standing, if he deviates from the path given by Prabhupada, then one should give up such a guru. One should not hesitate. Even in the Shastras, there is a verse which says about the deviation of a guru. Generally, 99% of the gurus are not supposed to deviate because they have accepted the right kind of path and they have got the right association and they are going on the right path. But still, the living being has the free will. Anytime one can misuse his free will. So by misuse of free will, the guru can fall, become a patabrasta, as we say. Can fall down. Because it is said the spiritual life is like Shurasya Dhara, it is said. Shurasya Dhara Kaviyo Vadanti. It is considered to be a razor's edge. It is considered to be a razor's edge. That is why one who takes a spiritual life has the likelihood that one may fall down if one is not very careful. Just like when you are shaving, if you are not very careful, what will happen? It will cut your cheeks. It will start profusely bleeding. Similarly, while practicing spiritual life, one has to be very careful. That's why he should always associate with devotees and never associate with non-devotees. As far as possible, avoid the company of non-devotees. Now somebody may ask a question, if spiritual life is so risky, then why should we take it up? Better be like ordinary people. Why should one become a guru?
साल से जो अपने कार्य भगवान की जाए
और वैसे सेम या इट इज रिस्की समबडी में से इन स्पिरिचुअल लाइफ इज सो रिस्की देन व्हाई शुड दे बिकम अ डिवोटी व्हाई डू चांस 16 राउंड्स एंड फॉलो द फोर रेगुलर प्रिंसिपल्स वन डे वी मे फॉल डाउन व्हाई शुड वी टेक दिस रिस्क समबडी मे आस्क दिस क्वेश्चन इट्स लाइक आस्किंग oh if I use a blade and shave up myself then I'll get cut better let me not shave then how will it look like if you didn't shave till now for so many months and years how will it look like you will look so ugly you will have long long beard and matted hair so we have to shave if we have to look clean huh? we have to shave similarly in our heart there is lust pride envy anger illusion greed these are all like long beards we have to shave them up and what is the matter of shaving up taking the spiritual life very seriously. So, spiritual life has a risk, but what is there in this world which does not involve risk? Tell me. Is there anything that doesn't involve risk? In fact, those people who take risks in the company are paid the best salaries. Do you know that? Those people who go out of the way to take risks, they are given best salaries. And there are advertisements, you can see that. In the same way, spiritual life is a risk that is taken for the right purpose. That is taken for the highest purpose in life. Because by taking the spiritual life, the living being can get rid of the suffering material world and return to God completely. And even if you fall down, is there a loss? There is no loss. Because whatever spiritual life you did, it is preserved intact. It is with you. If you have done 20% purification and you fall down, the next life you will continue from 21%. So there is no loss. So such a guru also, if he has deviated down, it is no loss for him. Later on, he will continue again. Like Bharat Maharaj deviated, fell down. Again he continued in the next life. Gajendra was Indrajumna king. He fell down. But then he continued in the next life. So, there is no loss in the part of such a guru. As far as we are concerned, it is said that the relationship that a disciple has with the guru is eternal. It is true. But it is not that the guru comes always. Sometimes Guru may send his representative. Like there are so many Gurus. As you see, when Billamangala Thakur was once addicted to the company of a prostitute called Chintamani, she always was with her. One day she had gone to her another house, her house at a faraway place. And Billamangala Thakur was mad for her company. I have to meet this prostitute today. I had to meet her somehow. It was heavily raining. There were hailstorms. But he still persisted in his endeavors. He started running in the streets. And there was a big flood. He crossed over the flood, catching some log of wood, which he thought of to be wood. It was actually a dead body. And then he went to the house of Chintamani. Everything was completely logged. And it was pitch dark in the night. There was lightning in the sky. And there was thunderstorm. And nobody was to be found in the street. Everywhere there was flood. And the house was covered with huge walls. And there was a huge iron gate and there was no scope of entering the house at all. Even if you would yell and shout, nobody would hear you in the roaring sound of the rain. So he was wondering what is to be done. Then he thought somehow I have to climb up and reach the top. He found a light in the top window. So he understood there must be Chintamani there in the top. So he climbed up the gate, catching some rope or something, which he later on detected it was a snake actually. It was a mountain snake. He caught all of it and climbed up. And then when he went to the window, he broke it open and he entered into the window. And there was Chintamani there. And at that time, Billamangala Thakur's body was having so many bruises. It was profusely bleeding from different parts of his body. And he was breathing very stressfully. And his eyes were shuddering tears. And he was so much travel stained. And then Chintamani asked him, what is it? Why did you come here? What do you want? Then he said, I came to meet you. Then Chintamani told him, what a great fool you are. If you had even a drop of the eagerness that you have to meet me, if you have that much eagerness, even a drop of it for Krishna, you would have achieved him long ago. These are the statements he said. Hearing this, immediately there was lightning in the sky. In his head, great lightning. And then he contemplated on the sentence. What did she say now? It is not Chintamani who is speaking. It is my guru who is speaking through her mouth. So at once he left her. He told her, yes, Chintamani, what you are saying is true. Now I am going to put the same endeavor in Krishna service. Thank you for your guidance. He said, then he went away from them. And then he became a great Krishna's devotee later on. So much so that he wrote so many books on Krishna's glorification. Even today those books are very, very famous. So this day Guru may come in various forms. So if Guru doesn't come directly, the eternal Guru doesn't come directly, he will send his representative to rescue. Srila Prabhupada said that. Because when Prabhupada left the planet, it was not that all his disciples became pure devotees and they also went back with him. There were many disciples who were left out. And Prabhupada said, if you don't get liberated in this life, either the Guru will come again and again to liberate you, or he will send somebody, a very trustworthy agent, to reclaim the disciple. So somebody may get a confusion, that means my Guru, is he my eternal master or a representative? So one need not worry about that. As long as one becomes connected to the Guru Shishya Parampara properly, and the Guru is qualified for giving Diksha, he has to be authorized for giving Diksha by ISKCON. In ISKCON there is a board which chooses who can be a Guru and who cannot be. If he is authorized, then one can accept shelter of such a personality, as long as he is in good standing. And then by taking shelter, by learning gradually, one will elevate oneself more and more, and can come to the platform of Sarupya Siddhi. One can realize one's own identity. And if one feels that sometimes people say, oh, there are so many problems, what is this, you know, some gurus are falling down, and spiritual life is difficult. So in this way, people sometimes blame either the process or the gurus, and they don't take any shelter. And some people even argue that why should we go to a guru? There are books available. There are Vedas available, there are Bhagavad Gita. I also have Bhagavad Gita with me. I can read it myself. Like one boy was asking about, one devotee was asking about this. Ekalavya self-study course, is it? Actually, this name is very appropriate. I like this name very much because they say Ekalavya did self-study that time, right? Because he went to Dronacharya, and Dronacharya disagreed to give him shelter. So he started his own method of learning the archery. So these people also must have started such a course in the name of Ekalavya. But very few people know the real story of Ekalavya. In fact, Ekalavya belonged to a Nishada community. And these people, Nishada community people, they were completely against the government of the Kauravas. Kauravas who come in the race of Kuru, they were always respected. Even the Pandavas belong to the Kaurava race, you must be knowing that. Because they are all Kuru's descendants. They were one family actually, Pandavas and Kauravas together. So they were respected by all the kings. They were all paying the tributes on a regular basis. But this community people, Nishada people, whenever the Kauravas would go to collect taxes, they would take their weapons and other things, they would fight with them and they would run away, they would escape, but they would never pay tributes properly. They were always nuisance creators. They were like that. They were even lower than Shudra class people. So this Ekalavya belonged to such a class of people. And when Dronacharya was giving the archery class to the Pandavas and Kauravas, this Ekalavya came to him and said, I would like to accept you as a guru. Please give me training in archery. And then immediately Dronacharya could understand that this person is unfit to learn archery because he is not qualified. He is even lower than a Shudra. If he learns archery, he will misuse it. Knowledge should not be given in the wrong hands. It's like giving a garland to a monkey. You can understand what the monkey will do with the garland. So knowledge should be given to the right person. This is one of the problems of the modern times. The scientists have the knowledge how to create bombs, but unfortunately their senses are not controlled. So what a combination you see. Bombs in the hand of a person who has no control of senses. So what do you expect to happen? Bomb blasts like Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And many more will come in future, you will get to see. That's what happens. Because if a person has no control of mind and senses, naturally he will misuse his powers. Knowledge in the wrong hands. So, keeping this in view, Dronacharya said, that no, I will not give you education. This is not a duty that is meant for you. You go back to your community and do your duty, what is meant for you. So every type of class of men have a particular duty to perform. Like the Shudras, they do weaving, they do labor work for the others. The Brahmanas give education and knowledge. Kshatriyas give protection to women, children, old people, and Brahmanas and things like that. So everyone has a duty to perform. So Dronacharya told him, it is not your duty. you better go back. And then Ekalavya went back. And he thought, if you would not teach me this, then I will make a portrait of Dronacharya and I will learn with that. Then he made a portrait of Dronacharya. And then he would bow down to that portrait and he would start learning Asya. Here also please understand, the purpose of Ekalavya in making a portrait was not to get his mercy or get his blessings. His only purpose of making a portrait was to tell the worldly people that I am a famous disciple of Dronacharya. Yes, see, I am also a disciple of Dronacharya. So, because Dronacharya was in general very world famous that time, by claiming to be his disciple, then he will also become famous. You get the point? That was his whole idea in making the portrait. So he made the portrait and he was learning. And of course it appeared that he learned the archery very nicely. One time when the Pandavas were passing by, they found a dog whose mouth was filled with arrows and was profusely bleeding. And then immediately the Pandavas went to Dronacharya and said, see this innocent animal. Dronacharya saw that animal and said, this cannot be the work of a Kshatriya. This must have been the work of somebody lower than a Shudra. And then he commented, this must be the work of Ekalavya, he said. And as he proposed, it was true. It was the work of Ekalavya. Then he called for him. Then he told him, this was the reason why I didn't teach you. Because the Kshatriyas are supposed to kill only certain animals. They are not supposed to kill the cows or send the arrows into the mouth of a dog. They have certain animals to kill in the forest. Why the Kshatriyas would kill animals in the forest? There is a definite reason for that. Because in the forest, the saints and sages would be performing penance. And there might be some wild, ferocious animals like tigers and lions. So they would kill them to a certain proportion so that those animals will not disturb the penance of the great sages and saints. So they would also cut some trees and make a pathway for the sages to move in the forest. So this was the work of the Kshatriyas. They would not harm any animal. So Dronacharya told him, just see, you have proved your nature by harming this innocent creature. So then Dronacharya, then Ekalavya came to him and he told him, my dear Guru, I am ready to give you anything. Then, keeping in mind that this fellow may misuse his talents in the future, Dronacharya told him, cut off your thumb and give it as a dhan to me. So he cut off. Unfortunately, 99% of Indian population, if you ask them, they glorify Ekalavya for doing this work. That he cut off his thumb and gave, what a great disciple. So you also become Ekalavya. People say that. The foolish people don't know why his thumb was to be cut. Because Dronacharya did not want him to misuse his artful talent in the wrong direction. See, it is said if a Kshatriya has lot of power, the power is meant for what? To give protection to old people, children and women and cows. But if the Kshatriya takes his power and wants to molest a woman and rape her, is it a useful power? Or he wants to beat the old people? Or he wants to torture the children, or he wants to cut the throat of a cow and eat cow flesh. Is the power rightly used? That is it, he said, vidyam vivadaya dhanam madaya. One who has vidya, he may misuse it by tarka vitarka, arguments. Or one who has wealth, he may become unnecessarily proud. In the same way, he said, shakti paresham paripidanaya. If one has the power, one may misuse it by torturing other people. Similarly, Drona thought that Ekalavya is going to torture other people in future because of having this kind of skill. So that should be curtailed. That was his whole purpose. So in this way, Ekalavya is not at all famous as a disciple, according to the scriptures. He is in fact an ideal example of an illegal disciple, one who doesn't deserve to be a proper disciple. So Shastra says that one should not force oneself to be a disciple like Ekalavya. One should be an ideal disciple like Arjuna. This is the lesson that we learn. So the modern Ekalavya classes also teach you the same thing. If you say Ekalavya self-study, that means this is actually not the way of studying. One actually needs a good teacher. But unfortunately in the modern times there are no competent teachers also. Like when I was studying in my engineering college in the South, I used to see like one professor used to come and he used to open a book and keep on dictating. Most of the boys will go to sleep. He also in between will get sleepy. Like that, he'll dictate. So it is useless to have such professors who simply give dictation. In between the class, after half an hour, you'll go for rounds to see. So those boys who don't want to make notes, they will not sit in the periphery, but they'll sit in the center and go to sleep.
So in this way, we find teachers are useless, so students are also becoming useless. Sometimes students find it is better for us to stay at home and buy some notes and study nicely instead of going to the college. So that is becoming the trend in the modern times. But still, whatever be the stature of a teacher in a college, as students we should try to respect them as far as possible. We don't have to disrespect them. But teachers also have to become truly competent. The teacher should be so brilliant and so enterprising that the students should want to learn from him. The students should want to learn more and more from him. That was actually the kind of teacher Dronacharya was. When Dronacharya was passing by, he was wearing ordinary clothes, very tattered clothes, and he appeared like a very poor brahmana. And the Pandavas, they were playing a ball game, and the ball fell into a well, and they didn't know how to take it. They were all blinking, they were all looking into the well, and they couldn't take it out. And Dronacharya was passing by, and he asked his children, "What kind of Kshatriyas are you? We don't know how to take this ball out. Come here, I'll help you out." So he told them to bring some bunch of darbha grass. Then he took one grass and he sent it, and it went and hit the ball in the well. And then he took the second grass and hit it behind the first grass, and it got stuck behind the first grass. Like that, one after other he sent the series of grasses, and then when everything went, then he gradually chipped at the ball like this, using the string that he made with a series of grasses. So he was a very expert archer himself. So naturally everyone had respect for him. Similarly, a teacher should be ideal. Like we have Professor Krishna Smaran Prabhu in Delhi. Such an ideal professor. He is so famous for teaching applied mechanics in IIT Delhi. He has published so many papers, and he has a thorough understanding of the subject in and out. Even in night, if you wake him up, even waking up from a dream, he can speak on the subject. He is so thorough on the subject. Very famous. At the same time, he is not an ordinary material teacher. He is a devotee of Krishna. He and his wife, they are giving training to more than 100-200 students in IIT Delhi. So this is an ideal teacher. So any teacher actually is supposed to also have a spiritual background. But modern teachers, many of them want to speak of spiritual background. Many of them don't even have moral background. When I was studying in IIT, one professor, Professor Garg, used to teach us. So in one hand he will have chocolates, another hand cigarette. That is something like this. Yeah. This is the standard of teachers we have today. Useless. So that is why students are also losing respect for this noble profession of teaching. That's the reason. So at least our devotees, if they become teachers, they should set a very ideal example. So Guru is actually the role model for disciple. The disciple in his life wants to gradually practice and become purified, and wants to achieve the same qualities what Guru is having. It is not enviousness, nor is it considered bad on the part of a disciple to have a desire to get the qualities of Guru. One can want to become like Guru by gaining his qualities like humility, surrender, and his desire for preaching. Everything one can get from the Guru. And when one surrenders to such a Guru at the time of initiation, it is not 100% surrender. In fact, it is the beginning of surrender. Just like when you have to get into engineering, you have to do 10 years of schooling and 2 years of intermediate college. And then you have to write some entrance test. And then you get entry into engineering. In the same way, if you have to get diksha, there are some things that you have to do. Like you have to chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna. You need to follow the 4 regulative principles: no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. And you have to even avoid the finer things: no onion, garlic, or coffee, tea, and things like that. When you follow all these principles for a period of time, like 2 or 3 years, then one also should be very committed to ISKCON society, in serving Srila Prabhupada. Then when one becomes so fixed up, these are all the prerequisites for initiation. When you're doing all these things, then Guru agrees to give you shelter. Then he gives you diksha. But the diksha is the beginning of surrender. That's like if you join engineering first year, do you get the degree automatically? Do they give you the first year engineering, they give you a certificate? After that comes the real hard work. 4 years of hard work. How many papers you study in engineering totally? From 15? 40 papers you have to clear. In the course of doing that, you may get 80-80, 1 year down, 2 years down, or you may get a distinction. Similarly, even after diksha also, sometimes the disciple has stumbling blocks, he may fall down, or he may again come back, he may stand up again and start fighting with Maya. So he may go on, somebody may get distinction. So in this way he goes on, first year, second year, third year, fourth year he finishes, and then if he successfully finishes that, then he gets degree. Similarly, a disciple gradually begins to surrender at the time of Diksha, and gradually at the time of becoming completely pure, he is 100% surrendered. That time he will be a pure devotee. He is 100% surrendered. Karishye vachanam tava. You just want to fulfill Guru's order. Then you are a pure devotee. Then one becomes fit to return back to Godhead. Simply getting a Diksha from a Guru is not a reserve ticket for going back to God. Never think like that. Getting Diksha is only the beginning. It's like, you know, getting engineering seat is only the beginning. That won't bring forth a certificate for you. You may proudly say that I got into engineering college. But then the question comes, how many years you pass, no? Will it take 8 years or 10 years? No? So you have to clear up also, all the papers, and you have to make a pass. Similarly, taking Diksha is of course very nice, but then one has to maintain the standards day after day, month after month, year after year, without falling down. One has to progress in the smart path of returning back to Godhead. One should become completely pure. Any questions I have left unanswered? One good question I was asked, which was a little subtle question, which I thought I need not answer, but I will do that in conclusion now. Like he said, when a guru performs certain acts, we may think that he has fallen down. And we may, like Shukracharya did something, because of which Bali Maharaj rejected him. But then it is also said, Vaishnavira Kriya Mudra Vijnana Bhujaj. That means one cannot understand the inconceivable activities of great devotees. One cannot understand. By seeing the activity of Vaishnava, one cannot judge him. We should not be judgmental. So Guru may do something which we cannot understand, then why should we reject him? He may be doing something that is inconceivable to my mind, that may be beyond my mind to understand. So somebody may have this question. This is actually sentimentalism. If, for example, I will not tell you the names, but in India there have been such sadhus. Sometimes a sadhu gives gali. I heard in Kolhapur there is one sadhu. You go to him, if anybody bows down to him, he will talk such vulgar words. And again, not the vulgar words, disciples will say, this is actually his mercy. He's giving us mercy. Whenever he is very ecstatic, he will give gali like this. So they say like that. I heard about this bogus guru. Similarly, there are gurus in India, like one guru I heard is having all his men, disciples, down the hill. But up the hill, he is having a house in the center, like the stem of a lotus, and around which he's got all the house rooms of his shishyas, women disciples. So what do you expect to happen? He wants to live in the top, surrounded by all his women disciples, and he keeps his men disciples down. So this kind of illicit activities are going on in the name of Guru and disciple. So we cannot tolerate such things. Somebody calling himself to be Bhagavan, somebody surrounded by women. Actually, I don't want to tell you these things frankly, because you may feel hurt, because even in Maharashtra there are such friends who are smoking, who are surrounded by women, who are doing this, doing that. Please don't feel hurt because you belong to Maharashtra, because you are not a Maharashtrian. You are a pure spirit soul, different from your body. So such gurus are there in every part of India. It's not only in Maharashtra. India is a land of great saintly persons, accepted. But still there are many equal amount of bogus saintly persons, not even equal, you can say. 10 times more bogus people in India. So we have to safeguard ourselves. And telling you these things frankly, because don't get cheated. There are so many people who go on in the name of Guru, but they are not Guru at all. Or we may say, in other words, they are giving you something good, but they are not giving you the ultimate good. They may be teaching some good principles. They may say, you should obey your parents, you bow down to God, and also they will teach you many good principles, but they will not tell you how to get out of this material world and go back to Krishna. They cannot teach you that. There are so many people moving on in the name of saintly people. So we should not get cheated. So our guru's activity, if it is bringing about some kind of suspicion in our mind, what should we do? Can anyone say? If you are finding that a guru, you feel that he is not in good standing, he is committing some big blunders, and what will you do? Will you close your eyes and say, whatever Guru does is perfect? Will you say like that? What should you do? You should ask people who are his equals. You should ask the senior Vaishnava, senior devotees, who are his followers. You should ask them, why? Why is he behaving like that? Is my understanding wrong? Is he in good standing or is he going wrong? So one has to ask. We cannot be blind. We cannot be sentimental. So both are required, religion and philosophy. Both should go hand in hand. If you only stick to philosophy and start all the time, very scrutinizing the unwise guru with a microscopic vision, seeing his movement, how is he walking? He is not walking like a guru. He is not charismatic like a guru. You cannot be only doing things on a mental, philosophical platform. You should also follow the guru's order, whatever he has given you. So you practice the religion and you also know the philosophy. At the same time, if only one follows everything that a guru says, without knowing the philosophy behind, what is a guru, actual guru, then one can become sentimental. It has happened with people. There are so many gurus in India who are themselves not following the standards, and they have thousands of followers. They have. Thousands and thousands of followers they have. And those people have a sentimental sight in them. You will see so many people like that in India. Their guru can do anything. They will say, no, no, no. Don't say anything about the guru, it will become aparad. He can do any nonsense. But he should not talk about it. So ISKCON does not permit that. Even within ISKCON, sometimes when people were given the post of gurus and they took undue advantage of that position, that can happen, right? Like Indra was given the Indra Padavi post. So he became proud and he started taking undue advantage, telling the Vrijavasis that I am God, serve me, don't serve Krishna. In the same way, later on Indra was punished by Krishna. He was taught a good lesson. Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill and taught him a good lesson. Similarly, if a guru takes undue advantage of his position, and just because he is obeyed by everyone and everyone falls at his feet, he exploits women, or he is not doing his sadhana properly, he is just taking name and fame and respect, and he is doing self-adoration, not setting a proper example, then such a guru will fall down. And in ISKCON, whenever it happened, immediately such gurus were thrown out in their position. They were told immediately that you should take to the simple dress of a householder and you should get married and you should live as a householder and be a humble Vaishnava. ISKCON is the broad organization that such people were also allowed to live as humble devotees, but they cannot take any senior roles. They cannot take the position of guru or a manager. They cannot take. It is not permitted. They will be allowed to come to temple, take darshan and live as a devotee, but they cannot assume leadership positions. Once a person falls down. It has happened in ISKCON also. So ISKCON is a big organization. It's like a worldwide organization having 600 centers now. We are not trying to hide you from the realities of ISKCON, saying that, you know, we are all perfect. There is no one who has fallen down in ISKCON. We are not trying to hide you. It can happen with any organization. With any special organization, because hundreds and thousands of people come, there may be some people who are coming with ulterior motives, who may go to higher positions, whose heart is not yet purified. So such people sometimes when they are detected, immediately they are taken off from their positions at once. So we want to maintain the purity of the movement, ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada has given his principles in his book so wonderfully. And Prabhupada himself was such a pure personality. And he set such high examples himself. In such a ripe old age, he went abroad, he went to America, he preached so hard. In 12 years he encircled the globe 14 times. And even when he was lying in his deathbed, towards the end of his life, when he got a preaching opportunity in London, he jumped off from his bed. Even the doctors were surprised. He said, now I want to go to London and preach. And doctor said, you will die. He said, let me die preaching. Let me die preaching in the battlefield. I don't want to die a very complacent, satisfied death. I want to go and preach, and let me keep on speaking about Krishna and leave my body. So this is actually the meaning of a guru. And Prabhupada's followers should be like that. We are Prabhupada's followers. So Prabhupada left behind so many jewel-like disciples. And every one of them is working so hard, flying around the globe, maintaining so many temples and thousands of devotees worldwide. So they are also working hard. They are stretching themselves to the limits and working hard to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada established 100 centers in his time. And he's able to establish 500 more within just 2-3 decades. So it will become 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 like that. These are only the centers. And centered around these centers, there are hundreds and thousands of programs going on. So many programs are going on. So we are also grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So there are so many illustrious disciples of Srila Prabhupada. We should see them and take inspiration from them, take inspiration from Prabhupada, Dakshinan Saraswati, all the acharyas in the line. And we should also work very hard in spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The purpose of this lecture was that we should appreciate the need of a spiritual master. It's very important because all of you assembled here today, you all come from different parts of India, or different parts of Maharashtra. You have come to Pune by some divine will, by arrangement of God, and you have got joined in engineering. But it is by the arrangement of Lord that you came in the company of such wonderful devotees. You all are attending some program or the other, somewhere. And you are gaining the knowledge that is the most purest and pristine knowledge in the entire creation. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, there is nothing pure like the transcendental knowledge in the entire creation. That is offered to you. And you have got it, and you are getting it, and you are getting an opportunity to practice. And this opportunity is not available for millions of people in the world. Because how much quickly can we reach the people? But you have got the jewel which others don't have. So preserve it and take advantage of it. Don't lose it. Just like in English we say, don't throw pearls to swine. You heard this saying? Sometime a pig, when he is given a pearl, he doesn't understand the value of it. He throws it away and goes for eating soup. Similarly, sometimes when Krishna consciousness is given, people come. They come for one or two classes and they go away. Go for what? Simply indirect. Going to movies, going to parties, drinking, boozing, getting into bad company and ruining themselves and ruining others and ruining the family and nation. Go and become a victim of bad association. So you have got the jewel now. It is up to you whether you want to grasp it, hold it and take advantage of it, or to throw it away and go for useless things of this world. So it's my request to you that whatever you achieved in your life, this Krishna consciousness, nourish it, develop it more and more, expand it, so that you will be able to appreciate it to the fullest extent and others around you will also benefit by you. Hare Krishna. Any questions that I left unanswered?